Ho there! Welcome to the Swords and Scrolls podcast, where a rotating rogues gallery joins me in discussing comics and more in the genre of heroic fantasy. I am Jared Savitas, your guide in the realm of magic and mutants. Aye, it is time for another episode of Swords and Supers, and joining me today to discuss issues 190 and 191 of the Uncanny X-Men from 1984 is a fellow founding member of the Pathgrinders 3 Die Deep, Sean Wedding. Welcome to the Land of Scrolls, Sean.
Well, greetings. Thank you for the invite. It's nice being here. I'm excited.
I'm pumped.
I love the show. It's Toots time.
Thanks,
it just
man.
Seems like a long time coming.
It is.
Listen to you on other podcasts. Been on all so many podcasts.
We've been on podcasts together.
Yeah, on podcasts together.
Like, man, yeah. Holy crap!
I know. It's yeah. This is new. This is you hosting, and me talking X-Men. Well, that's not new. Me talking X-Men isn't new, especially old X-Men.
Yeah,
bread
man.
And butter.
80s X-Men. And you know, man, what I get to do is I get to do editor's notes now. This episode lets me drop editor's notes.
I really wish there was editor's notes in this Uncanny, because it talks about that issue, which you talk about on your episode.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
I mean, it could have had it in there, a little star. I mean, there's a lot of words, but just a star and a little bubble saying, hey, Marvel team up. Check it out.
Yep.
So now, you know,
into
which
these...
is odd for 84 Marvel. I mean, that was like, I don't know. They would have those in there. It'd block art all the time.
I think the key here, Sean, is that the editor on these books is Jim Shooter. And maybe Jim Shooter was like, we don't need that. You know what I mean? Because when Roy Thomas was editor, he was all about editor's notes.
That's probably, yeah. Well, and then he's like, Claremont's going to cover it up anyway. He'll let you know about what's going on through the whole Marvel Universe in the first couple pages, and what happened last issue, and what's going to happen this issue. So just buckle up.
Yeah. You got some reading. That's the thing about these issues. Compared to modern comics. You're in for some reading.
But I got the smell though, and it's on paper. So I can read it in like light, and it doesn't like shine, and like dialogue doesn't get, I don't have to move a page because I think modern comics are making me want to switch to digital some of the printing and and then they're using so crazy fonts nowadays. A little cursive. They did that in Uncanny X-Men recently. Cursive. It was like black on purple. Like, what are you doing?
That's insane.
It was, yeah.
Okay, Henry, so Sean,
yeah,
man,
anyway,
you're a longtime comic fan. How did you get into comics?
Oh man, I got into comics. Well, I was always getting them kind of like collecting. I didn't get hardcore until like 89, 88, 89. Batman movie was out and all that kind of stuff was happening. And that's when I started really collecting. But like, I was getting Spinner Rack stuff, Fantastic Fours, some Uncannies. Uncanny X-Men 201 was like my first ever issue. But I traded that out junior high for some Iron Man. I got into Iron Man, especially the Silver Centurion era. But then Inferno pulled me back to X-Men. And that's when I was really starting to collect. And then I started just really diving in. This issue 191, it's a spinner rack buy. It's not a direct edition.
Nice.
It's got a barcode on it. I can't remember when I got it. I just remember I got it because of that cover. It has Colossus and Vision on it, and it just looked awesome. But of course, I opened it and I'm like, "What's going on?" But then he informed me what was happening. And
oh yeah, the second page of 191 does the job.
Holy crap!
It's a great page though. Like it's a great page. Not to get
but
ahead.
No, I really started. I fell in love with Uncanny. Inferno brought me in, and then I started diving into back issues, especially at the comic shop I was going to at the time, back in the day. And then especially when I started going to cons and conventions before the X-Men movie came out, then I was able to get X-Men issues really, really cheap. Then the movie broke and it was kind of harder to get some back issues. So like my run goes all the way back to like 150 of Uncanny, with some stuff in front of that. But yeah, I was trying to get it all the way back to 100 at the time, but it's just not going to work. it's not going to work now at all, but, and I've kind of fell out of love with it. Especially after Cyclops struck first and smacked Captain America around, and I was like, okay, I'm done with them for a while. And Hickman brought me back for a while, and but these old issues though, I do return to them quite often, so it was nice to revisit these, jump back into my pull box to pull them out. They needed rebagged and boarded anyway.
I had to read these two issues in the Epic Collection, a digital Epic Collection, actually. I do not have these two issues.
Yeah, what I even dug out 188 and 189 because I wanted to, like, I wanted to kind of catch a little bit. And yeah, Celine does some damage in 189. God, her power set. Anyway, let's get into it.
Yeah. So, firstly, let me ask you this then. So, do you, what was it about the X-Men that got you, that hooked you into those guys?
I loved the team, but I also loved the whole, you know, they were hated. I mean, they had Avengers quality team, and it almost had the family was there. They'd have basketball games and, you know, baseball games, and Rogue would blow a kiss at the president. You know, there was all these things that Claremont was bringing to the table that, you know, I really was just digging on. It really helped. You had a short Canadian that drank a lot and was just would come back to the X-Men all hammered, and like, and they were all cool with it. And I don't know. There was just something about them that really pulled me in. And that's what made me kind of dive back and get back issues. That was the only book that I've really ever was like, I want to read more. I want to know what happened. I want all this other stuff that Claremont's talking about. Like, that's when I hit the Dark Phoenix saga. And then I got to read about the Brood, because I was reading about the Brood in Uncanny when they came to Earth, but I went back and read about them. And those stories were crazy. And, but yeah, I mean, and that was a good heyday when I was really starting to get in, because Silvestri was starting to really take off on that book. And it was just, and then, you know, then Jim Lee came in and the book separated, and X Factor rolled out too, at the, you know, and I was all in. New Mutants pulled me in a little bit later than I got in at Inferno. But yeah, I fell in love with those Mutants, and they were solid books. They had an editor team. A lot of stuff happened intertwined in between the issues. The crossovers were pretty spot on. So yeah, it was hard not to kind of dig on them. So I kind of fell out of love with Daredevil and Iron Man, and
fell in love with the Mutants.
Yeah, they were kind of, those two were like my go-to when I first was starting to read and collect. Some Fantastic Four here and there, but yeah.
I haven't checked the dates to see what is my first mutant book. Is it New Mutants? Is it Magic, the 4-issue limited series Magic?
Oh, yeah.
Was it the 4-issue limited Wolverine, or was it the Kitty Pryde Home Alone against a Xenomorph wannabe issue? One of those books was a spinner rack grab for me, and whatever it is would be the very first mutant for me. I'll have to do that groundwork. I didn't do it before this, but it's one
that
of those.
Candy. Oh yeah, where that alien. Oh, that's such a.
Yeah, John Byrne. Like I. Yeah. Yeah.
That was,
and I think
good issue. Great cover.
Up, with a flashback to when Storm was fighting those demons in the park, and like she's getting that lance like straight through her chest, and okay, whatever. That's a whole nother storyline. Okay,
But that's
so
it's good reading.
I got two more X-Men questions for you, Sean. Because for some reason you've always been like the X-Men guy to me. So do you have a favorite X-Men? I know that's a
got a
real tough
favorite?
question.
That is a tough question. I'll tell you, like Wolverine, I really fell in love with. Colossus stole my heart later on. There was just something about him, especially after the Siege Perilous, and he came back as that artist. And I was really hoping that they would just kind of leave him alone and let him just kind of be an artist. And like I don't know, there's something about Colossus, and then that kind of came to a halt when the whole legacy virus thing, and he sacrificed himself, and I was like, why are they writing this? Was the worst writing ever. Like, he stuck himself with the cure, then activated his power, and somehow that negated everything. But when he came back, and astonishing, say what you say about Joss Whedon, he was able to bring him back, and then bring that relationship with him and Kitty, and that was a great story. But they've twisted him so much in the past, and I just kind of hold on to Colossus. Like, I want him to. Like, he would be my favorite. Plus, he's just, depending on how they draw him, I don't know. I was never a big fan of just the Sylvester just had him in like the Speedo. I know.
Oh,
The Speedo and like cufflinks.
Speedo, cufflinks, and boots, man. That's it.
I mean, I wasn't, I kind of dig the red, yellow, like almost classic, and they've done
unitard
some
thing.
takes on that vibe. Yeah, I like that one, but
that's funny. I think I've kind of had the same sort of relationship with the X-Men, where one a character will rise and then maybe somebody else might rise. I was into early, see, but then again, was the Dazzler my first X-Men exposure? Because as kids, my grandmother got me and my one of my brothers and my younger sister, we all got a subscription to comic books as a gift one year for Christmas. And my sister got Dazzler, so she might have been my first mutant exposure. And so I think she's my favorite X-Men because of that nostalgia, and because then she started when she dated Longshot, and like I thought Longshot was my favorite for a minute, and so
Longshot has will always have a, like,
right?
See Art Adams on him, like, drawing Longshot. If he's on the, like, it's hard not to, but the Outback X-Men would probably be like, that is by
that's
far
where I...
the best, like, you know, Longshot, Psylocke, Rogue, Dazzler, you know, Aurora, Havoc, Wolverine, like those got, that was the team. One of my favorite like covers is Havoc. Like, it's all like creepily drawn, and it's Havoc, and they're like, welcome to the X-Men, hope you survive, and they're all like around him, and he's all like scared, because that's when Magneto was kind of chaperoning, because he was running the New Mutants at the time too. So, but then they got sucked to Outback, and so it's some good stories with all those characters at that time. So
that's when I got sucked into the X-Men hard, you know, because I like had picked up like that Kitty issue, and then I read the, you know, I picked up the Longshot, so maybe that was one of my earliest mutants. And so
but he's not mutant.
But that Siege Perilous, that's when I got drawn in. That cover of Colossus lifting up some rubble, and like somebody's hand or something is in there, and like the sky is like pink, like neon pink or whatever it's colored. That was the beginning of my hardcore into X-Men for a chunk.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
What's
I'm
a must
digging
read?
it.
What's a must read X-Men storyline for you? Like, where if you're like, man, this is the kick right here. Is it Siege Perilous?
I would say like that run, the Dallas, the Fall of the Mutants, the Fall of the Mutants storyline, where they die and yeah, that I really, they fight in Dallas because it's so crazy because there's all this like story happening and you're rooting for everybody to see everybody, but it never happens. That would be it. As Guardian Wards, though, as a collected,
yes,
I'm sorry, but I've read that I don't know how many times.
I have too, Sean.
it is the art in it is so amazing because it's Art Adams, and then oh my gosh, does the first part, the Alpha Flight X-Men, I'm blanking on his name,
Paul Smith,
duh, yes, yeah. I mean. It's like from front to back, just gorgeous. Yeah, that would probably be, but I think that would only, I mean, it's not an X. It's so like a Thor X-Men story that.
It's great, dude.
It's
amazing though, but it's got like all the mutants, like, you know, right. You have New Mutants. You have Alpha Flight. You said as in the beginning, you've got the X-Men, like, I bought that collection at a used bookstore in high school. I still have it. And I was just like, this is amazing. This is everything I love, right? Like this, you know, you got Art Adams, you've got Asgard, which is the closest you get to sword and sorcery in the superhero realm of the MCU.
His outfit creation for all of those characters is so like spot on.
Yep.
They all made sense.
I love that, like, how like naked Wolverine is almost, you know,
yes.
But he's just like cool with it. He's just like, we're good. And he's all hairy. Like, he's just, it's great. It's great. And then you get Popeye, Bluto, and Olive Oil in one scene. Asgard versions, which is hilarious.
Yes. Yeah. Well, anything he ever did with Warlock, Art Adams, is especially in that book, is like his powers. So he just has so much fun with it.
We're deep, and we haven't talked about the books we came to talk about.
Sunspot, Lift, and Volstagg.
Yeah.
I mean.
Oh shit! Yeah.
And then he like poofs out. He powers poofs out. Oh god, that's such a good read. Anyway,
do you have much of a relationship with like sword and sorcery characters or anything like that?
You know, I dabbled with like Conan, and I've kind of like I really liked some of the stuff that Marvel did with was it Belit? I can't think of her name.
Belit. Yeah.
Because when I was doing the Polis podcast, Craig would read some Conan, in that world, and I would get pulled into it, and I enjoy it. It was never one I dabbled in. Thor would be your closest, and that would be mostly the Simonson run, where it's like, a lot of his like adventures and things like that.
And a lot of vibe. Asgardians, right? You know,
yeah.
And spun off into Baldur and stuff like that.
So. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, like that would be my closest. I've always dabbled in it. I always try it out and I enjoy it. It's just, I don't know. It's
well,
weird. Does it hold me on?
Much like Asgardian, the Asgardian War.
I like capes,
right?
I guess.
Yeah.
Speedos and capes.
Yeah.
Self loops.
And that's what we got here, man. We got peanut butter and chocolate mashed together, same as Asgardian Wars. Okay,
mashed together like Caliban and Professor X.
Oh my god.
That is creepy. Gross.
All right. So the setup for this story begins with a guy, regular old guy, Jamie Rodriguez. He's a fisherman, but he discovered the Hyborian sorcerer Kulan Goth's amulet in the I believe it's East River, where Spider-Man casted at the end of Marvel Team Up number 79. And if you missed it, go back to episode 20 of this very podcast for full coverage of that issue. There's my first editor's note. And
episode 20. Yeah. I even looked it up because I was like, hey, I know they talked about this. I got to see what episode it was. I'm like, there it is. We're going to say it.
Yeah, man. And in issue 189 of the Uncanny X-Men, Jaime Rodriguez, he's been like, Kulan Goth's been trying to tempt him through the amulet, but he's been able to resist it, but he's got it on him. And in 189, he is stabbed waiting for a subway by a mugger who takes the amulet. And this guy falls prey to Kulan Goth and is possessed by him, much like the security guard was in Marvel Team Up 79. And then Kulan Goth transforms Manhattan into a Hyborian realm of barbarians and magic. He seals it off by a strange mystical barrier. Now, Kulan Goth is the reason why we're talking about these two issues, because, like I talked about it, that Marvel Team Up. I also talked about his first appearance from Conan the Barbarian number 15, which I discussed on episode 11 of this podcast. Second editor's note.
There it is.
Screw you, Jim Shooter. Editor's notes.
You want people to go back and listen to that shit.
Sean could have used those when reading this storyline again.
Think Google, I guess. Marvel Team Up.
But that's where we pick up in issue 190, because shit has changed. Uncanny X-Men issue 190 and 191, which came from the 80s, are all by the same creative team. We have covers by John Romita Jr. and Dan Green are the inks. The credits of the stories, script by Chris Claremont. The breakdowns are by John Romita Jr. Dan Green does the finishes. Mm-hmm. The colors are by Glynis Ween, and the letters are by Tom Orzechowski.
You could really tell where Green finishes.
I love the art in these two issues. There's some amazing stuff.
It's crazy when I look at it, because especially that the cover to 191, you can really see like Romita's style there, like big time. Yeah, the meld of the stuff that Green's able to do, or the inkers that Romita has currently are just not as good, is what I'm trying to say.
Or when he inks himself.
Sometimes, yeah. It's just you can see where the finishes are there, and just the style is great. It is, yeah, it works well with the book.
Issue 190 is titled An Age Undreamed Of, which is a line from Conan. And then the second issue, Raiders of the Lost Temple. And Claremont is playing off everything. Raiders of the Lost Ark here. Both of these stories have been reprinted 10 times. I love looking up the reprints, how many times they reprint shit. I love it. But Kulan Goth has turned Manhattan into...
I wonder how many times it got recolored.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, let's not talk about recoloring. Kulan Goth has turned Manhattan into a medieval nightmare. To get into this area, you can pass through the barrier, but you are then changed. There's a loss of memory. If you are a cop, you become a guard. Your gun becomes a sword. If you're a taxi driver, now you're driving a carriage, things like that. The only one who does not, well, there's a couple characters that don't seem too affected by all this. One of them being Spider-Man, who is immune to due to his previous encounter with Kulan Goth, but some Avengers, the New Mutants, a scattering of X-Men, not to mention the Morlocks, the mutants of the sewers, are all under the spell. But, as I mentioned, there's two people, not just Spider-Man. There is Selene, who works unseen a little bit. She's manipulating shit in the background.
I do like that panel where she gets shown there. and like she's in like this, it's a black,
oh yeah,
black
she,
line.
yeah.
You just see her face, and then she just slips away in it, like
yeah,
Homer Simpson in a bush, and you're
yeah,
like, that's Celine.
Yeah, they're really pushing right away. They're like, this person is going to be working in the shadows.
Yep.
And so with her manipulations, the heroes are able to defeat Gath, which breaks the spell, which allow the heroes to beat Celine, which allows Doctor Strange to tweak the spell with additional power from Ilyana Rasputin to turn back time, hit the reset button. They question the repercussions, the heroes having a discussion afterwards, and unbeknownst to them, Nimrod arrives in the present day, changes events in the subway, Kulan's Goth, his amulet, which contains his life force, falls down into the muck of the subway tracks, and
no one's going
none
down
of this
there.
Happens. None of the two issues happen after that.
No one's going down that muck.
No.
Not no subway to ever. Yeah, that Nimrod showing up, I was like, oh, wow. I
yeah.
bought this issue a long time ago, and I had that appearance of Nimrod. That's crazy.
Yeah, and he ends up befriending Jamie and living with his family for a bit. And
yeah, and then like
that's
the
a whole
whole
nother
Bastion thing comes into fruition in the future, like because like he gets with the yeah. That's crazy. That's crazy. That's a whole nother story and a whole nother podcast.
One thing
A whole nother galaxy.
I wanted to talk about Celine.
Sure.
So she is introduced in New Mutants number 9 from 1983, which I pulled out. I got it right here. I wanted to go back and look through her first appearance.
I did break out my omnibus.
She becomes pretty much strictly a villain in the various mutant books, like all across the board. What I find super funny, it seems a little odd to me. So she is a sorceress from the Hyborian Age. She is an ancient enemy of Kulan Goth, but we never get that. We never get that in anything. There's no appearance in any of the Barbarian books where Celine makes,
whoa,
which
okay.
That's where I think is a big skip. I feel like Celine could have been used in a Savage Sword story or something.
Who was her creator?
She's a Claremont.
There you go.
She's
so
a Claremont.
Claremont just said she was probably because of this whole because at the time was that because Conan was owned by Marvel.
Yeah,
so then he was like, okay, well, I'm gonna just create this, let's say she's got a hybrid, I can't say the word, Hyborian past, because I was unaware of that at all, because I knew her, she had a past with, I knew she was kind of ancient, and I knew she was Magma and her had a past in like Roma, Nova Roma, and all the like
yes.
the whole that whole weird world that Magma lived in, or different world.
Yeah, like a weird
kind of like a
Rome.
like Wakanda Caesarville.
Yeah,
you know, it's like secret, but yeah. So get introduced to them, her through that, and like her power set, she went right into the Hellfire Club, and she's kind of came back in through other X-Men books, but yeah, I was unaware with like she was part of the Conan age until like she said in the book, that's an old enemy. And I'm like, what? And I even looked it up. I was like, what? I was like, I didn't know she had that. Like, was that just written in so they could attach the two?
That's the thing too, with this story, is that I feel like I missed out on something. And,
yeah.
And I feel like if this story was done in the modern era, it would be a limited series. Like it wouldn't be in a couple X-Men books. I feel like they could have done, we could have seen everything. We could have seen Kulan Goth take over the guy, and then Kulan Goth cast the spell, do a cool scene of him fighting Doctor Strange, beating Doctor Strange, taking him captured, see the spell affect all the mutants that, as they're like in, you know, hang, because some of the mutants were hanging out in Manhattan. So like to see it affect them, to see it affect the Avengers, like to see the beginning of everything. Like I would have loved that. That would be so cool. because I feel like you kind of come in midstream and you're like, wait a minute, all this shit happened off panel.
Thing, you get an info dump by Valerie Cooper via like a government meeting. So like she tells the whole thing of the, and it's been going on for some time, but then you go back and here's Storm just awakening for the first time in on that boat and being attacked by the Morlocks, and they're trying to, get her, and that's how her and Callisto get away. It's kind of weird because it's like all of a sudden she wakes up and she's like, where am I? What's going on? And then, like, but wait, this has been going on for some time. I thought that's what Valerie just told us. Yeah, it would have been nice to see that transformation. Really, the whole, as you said, like, because that whole Doctor Strange thing isn't done in like one panel. Like, it just shows like this little bit of him being like pretty much muted. And
Just
he's like, ah,
captured. Yeah.
yep. He's like, I was able to do that. I was able to bum rush everybody. And
Yeah. Which is
it's really
it's
weird.
nuts. It's
Yeah.
nuts.
And how they handled that exposition is weird because, like, Val updates what happened about the transformation and everything and how some people are but then in the following issue, Kulon's giving you the 411. And you're like, oh, okay, this would have been better that first issue
Yeah.
instead of Val doing it.
Right. That when I was thinking of like coming up with like a summary, I was like, man, everyone should just read that second page of the 191, even though it should be in 190.
Right.
But
That
that sets it all up and it shows it's great layout because Kulon Goth is in the middle
yeah.
from top to bottom, and then there's panels that go down each side of him. Left side, you're getting what the world looks like. Right panel, what the world looks like after the spell. Left panel, superheroes. Right panel, the superheroes after the spell. Like you're getting everything laid out, the Morlocks, and
Yeah.
it's presented really cool. Did you read the Ex Necrosa series from
Yes. Yeah.
2009?
Yep.
So the first issue, she tells all of her, like, because she gathers a circle of, like, I don't know if it's other spellcasters or whatever around her. Or mutants that have power around her or
Yeah,
something.
it's kind of like the death powers or life powers and things like that. Yeah.
She tells them her origin in that first issue from 2009, and I want to see it. I want to read. I don't have it, but I
I
want to
gotta dig
read
it
it
out then.
because I want to see if they show
I do
her
too.
origin.
Because now I'm just sitting there. If they actually did, I feel like it, well, then I just it was kind of a couple panels and I don't recall it. But yeah, I read that
Huh.
series. Oh man,
Again,
I'll dig it out. I'll dig it out.
a
Well,
loss for
yeah.
the sword and sorcery side of Marvel U.
Right. And there was a lot of, I mean, how it's like he took control of the Morlocks. He explains why he did that because they were kind of weak-willed and they'd been beaten down so much. And, he was going to give them, a chance to like not be hunted and to hunt other people. But I still don't understand how Vision was able to be brought to Kulon's side at all.
And he's not changed. Like
Yeah.
he's the one character that, besides Spider-Man and Celine, of course, who, is in her Hellfire getup. But
Yeah.
like, yeah, Vision's not changed at all. And I want to talk about the covers, Sean, because
Sure.
you've got praise for them, and I feel like they fall down. I'm not
Really?
saying they're bad, but I'm saying I'm surprised. I'm surprised how they present the story. And I say that because in the Epic Collection, they show the covers for X-Men Classics from 1993, where they reprint these issues. Those issues present what I think I'm surprised they didn't use to make the sale the first time around, right? So your first issue, we have Kulon Goth over menacingly over the Caliban Professor X merged creature. And it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare cover. It's a striking cover. But then they only have a tiny little box that says, hey, we got Avengers, we got Spider-Man in here too. And I'm surprised they didn't hype that.
Oh,
And
sure.
in the classic X-Men cover, the reprint has Kulan Goth in the same sort of pose, but then he's over the transformed X-Men and Avengers, right? So that showcases them in their medieval garb. So I'm surprised they didn't do that. And then for 191 reprint, which is issue, these are issues 94 and 95 of Classic, it shows what I would have done for that cover, which is shown Spider-Man hanging by chains, ripped to shreds and hurting, with Kulan Goth menacing him there. And then, of course, we get Avengers and X-Men around there, too. So for issue 191, which you grabbed off the spinner rack because you were grabbed by it, which showcases Vision and Colossus fighting, which only happens in like two or three panels in that issue. I'm like, why is that the cover image? And not like, hey, man, we got Spider-Man in a bad spot. And what are these transformed heroes going to do about it?
Sure, sure. Sure. But this is Avengers and X-Men fighting on the cover.
Yeah, yeah, yep, yeah. Sure, I got you.
And it's foreshadowing what happens to Colossus. It's a spoiler cover. It happens like twice. They show it like, and then he meets his demise by it.
Yeah.
A lot of people die in these two issues.
Right, yeah. Like you were talking about the fall of the X-Men. Like, we get it in this storyline, like everybody gets cooked. The thing is that Claremont takes Kulan Goth, who right away in his first appearance in Conan the Barbarian, number 15 or whatever it was I mentioned earlier, like he, his essence is in this amulet. Now, granted, the Savage Avengers features Kulan Goth as well as an enemy, and they do a lot of backpedaling and a lot of storytelling in those issues that happen previous to these issues we're talking about, if you're going by like chronological storytelling.
Yeah.
Chris Claremont takes Kulan Goth and turns him into like the most monstrous evil sorcerer ever. He's killing children. He's sacrificing children like immediately. Yeah. And he is a sex freak. He like changes when he does capture Selene. He strips her mouth away.
Yes.
Takes her arms away so she replaces them with six tentacles.
She's got tentacle arms.
So now she can't cast spells because she can't use her vocal and hand gestures to do spells. But then he calls her, it's horrible. It's horrible what he says about her. It's insane. And I don't like it. It scares me. Sean, Kulan Goth says, after he changes her, "Thou art what suits thee best, a creature of wanton flesh who exists solely to bring me pleasure. I can see in thine eyes how happy that doth make thee." Gross.
That is gross.
I don't want to know. I don't want to know what this guy's getting up to with her in that form at all. Wanton flesh that's sexually lawless or unrestrained, lascivious, lewd behavior. Sean.
Sure. Sure. Well, but Selene, when she casted Rachel and Amara, she put them in some, Amara stayed in kind of a princess type outfit, but Rachel got put into a bikini.
Everyone does.
Yeah.
Everyone does. That's the whole thing.
Like, that's the savage part of it, right? Is that the savage part?
Yeah, that's what it means to be in the Hyborian age. Every woman's got to be in a bikini. Because you get the Callisto Storm.
Yeah.
This is what, like a round two fight with them now, if you considered, because didn't Storm already beat her once to take over the Warlocks?
Yep, that's round. It is round two, and that's why she got all upset that she's like, "Oh, you don't have your powers? Well, that's not worth it. I'm not going to fight you now," because this was powerless Storm. Going back to what you were saying, how they kind of missed on some storytelling, there's a whole section with Rogue that I thought was like she was in a crystal type form. The whole, like when you first see her, always drawn, it's explained that she's in a crystal form, but then she passes it on to this like other warrior, this someone trying to kill her. She passes it on to them, and she's killed by a sword because she turns into a human. But where did the crystal form come from, and how is she holding it for so long? Like, that's like something I wanted to know after I reread this. Like,
yeah, see, like there's missing parts that I think could be explored if they were to redo this storyline, like, and go deep on this storyline and do it like proper cool.
They have done that with some of this newer stuff at Marvel recently, where they're kind of like, oh, well, this takes place in these issues, and they'll do like this. They did that during Secret Wars, where they had a part where Spider-Man left, because it actually happens in Secret Wars, and they did the story with him being gone. And that would be something that would be really, I don't know if they could, yeah, it won't happen, but man, it'd be a neat story. Cause I'd like to see, I loved how Cap kept calling things his tribe. I didn't realize he was a barbarian until I reread this thing. Like, my brain didn't catch on. I just thought that was the clothes he was wearing. And then I'm like, oh, dude, he's a barbarian. Like, that's what he is.
There's a scene where a sniper just takes a pop shot at Storm. And before it can hit her, he just like quick with the shield. He's just like I thought it was cool. That's one of the coolest panels to me. There's a great panel that is straight torn out of a Conan the Barbarian comic when Spider-Man is being hunted down hardcore because Kulan Goth's like, this motherfucker's running around.
Yeah.
I faced him once before. He's immune to my powers. Get him. Everybody get him. Enemy number one. And he jumps into a tavern. And this is where we get introduced to all the heroes.
I really love those panels.
There's a panel.
The motion is pretty awesome.
The most sword and sorcery panel in it is, so Danny Moonstar, she has a commanding position amongst all the Morlocks. And there's a panel where she's like surrounded by a rushing group of Morlocks and she's pointing at the heroes. And she's like, you and your companions defy our dreaded Lord at your peril. Bring me their heads. And she's pointing and they're all rushing. Like, that is straight out of any Conan comic where any guy leading a bunch of troops is like, get that barbarian.
And the whole bar fight, that's always, I'm always, playing, being able to play Dungeons and Dragons and Pathfinder, and the tavern fight is always it's always good.
It's always good.
Well, that calls back to Asgardian Wars too, with the whole Sunspot Volstagg thing. But yeah, like Spider-Man jumping around that tavern and arrows being like, maybe this guy, we should help him. He looks like he's fighting the good fight. We should help him. And they're all being secret at the same time. Yeah, there's some like appealing stuff to it, though. The storytelling, I liked the world, but it just kind of all wrapped up quickly, too.
Ileana Magic, she's one of my favorites as well, because I loved that 4-issue miniseries or 3-issue or whatever it was, where she's with Sim and
Nastier.
It's Belasco, isn't it?
Isn't he Belasco? The main?
I think Belasco is Belasco the main bad guy in that one.
Yes.
And then Belasco, Belasco makes appearances in Kazar comics too. So I've always loved Belasco more than Mephisto. Love Belasco. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just because of my early exposure to him. So I've always liked her from that series. I thought that series was so great. And I love that her soul sword breaks. Like, if she hits a hero with it, they get all their memories back. They get freed of the spell. Every character is used really well. Well, I shouldn't say that. At least one character from each team is used really well. The rest of them kind of like fill the rank and file of like, sure, like Sunspot doesn't get like any real moment to shine. Right.
Well, the New Mutants kind of got thrown in there. They just became, they were villains right off the bat. So it's like they were just doing their thing and being evil.
Yeah.
So they were just using their powers for bad. I mean, which is bad for Moonstar and Danny's power. Ugh. It's not good to have if you're a bad guy.
it does get revealed that the creature captured and tortured by Kulan Goth turns out to not really be Selene, but is maybe a construct or something. It's not really clear to me. Or is that Amara and she switched places?
I assumed it was Amara, even though they didn't really reveal it. I just assumed that she was using her sorcery to like make people see, because that's why she didn't use her powers and was being quiet through the issues. But they never showed that part where the other person changed. It just went into like chaos mode, because then she took over, then the powers went out, blah, 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 and here comes Doctor Strange, we're over, blah, 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 we're talking, this night never happened, and you're like, okay, but is Amara safe?
Yeah, right.
And they did draw her in like the background, kind of like, it's weird how that was, I don't know, it was weird how it was kind of wrapped up in those like those last four pages.
It happens really quick.
Yeah, because there's questions. They had no problem answering things like multiple times at the beginning, but like at the end, you're like, was Amara safe? Because Rachel's sitting there going, I knew the whole time, but I couldn't say nothing.
See, now, and when she reveals, okay, so the heroes are able to separate Kulan Goth from his amulet due to the workings of Storm and Warlock.
Yeah.
The amulet then, instead of going to, flies quickly out of Storm's hand, right into Amara's hand, who reveals to be Selene. And then the Selene creature is at the foot of Kulan Goth because he's a weirdo perv with her. And she explodes, and it says a volcano erupts beneath Warlock and Kulan Goth, and like engulfs them in flame and magma. So is it magma?
Must have been,
and
her
if so,
magma.
That makes what Kulan Goth did even worse.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yucky. But like the panel, holy crap, man. The panel.
You did do that to poor Amara.
I don't like
why'd
it.
Why'd you just do that to me?
Sorry, buddy. That's how I read it.
And yeah, because now I'm looking at that panel and she is turning into flame and then the volcano. So it was Amara coming out of that disguise, and or magma, yeah, coming out of that disguise and then erupting. Yeah. And then you get into Warlock and his self-speech, which, you know, Simonson's Thor run, you get a lot of thighs and stuff, but man, Claremont and Warlock, or those two have a hard time. Like, he really goes and digs deep with that self-talk, and you're like, man, can we just take a couple out here, because we get it. Self-reproach, self trying, self can't, self, yeah. Self-recognize, self you, self, and you're like, okay.
A lot of selves.
I get it. We get it.
The panel of Amara Selene getting the amulet, I stared at the inking on that one for so long, because like, if that's all Dan Green choosing what he wants to highlight in that panel, and it's beautiful. Same with the one of the Selene Amara flame up, like there's some great stuff. Like one of the most shocking panels to me too is when Kulan Goth just is like, all right, Spider-Man, fuck it, you're dead, and just kills it. And that panel of like Peter's head flying back and snot flying out of his nose as he just gets like killed.
Yeah, because he is right after he escaped. Like right after he did his whole like, I'm Spider-Man. Like, I, you know, like he was talking to himself, like working himself up. He breaks out of that thing and then it's like, you're dead. He could have killed him anytime, and it was just like, oh, I'll just kill you now. And there was some really, really good moments that I like that. I mean, when there's no stakes, sometimes it's because the whole Warlock Storm thing was it was so bizarre. It was like he took control of her so he could live on, but that meant Storm would die so he could take out Selene.
Yep.
Like I
Yep.
said, those like last four, it's just everything's wrapped up a little like. It seems like after they got the necklace taken away, yeah, they were like, okay, we'll wrap it up.
And all the horrors that happened in the story just wiped clean, right? With the time reset. So all the sacrificed children, all the dead heroes, all the dead Morlocks and people, like all the nightmare just wiped back. I'm not a
No.
big fan of time wipe resets, but I get it.
Well, yeah.
It can be a
And
little lazy, if you ask me.
it is. But it does not have it would be really that would be it has that happened where in a Marvel storyline where like all of a sudden everybody gets memories of the things that have happened in that universe?
Oh, I don't know. Like
That
instead
would
of
be
like
like
if a
civilians
reset.
just losing their minds, like
Yeah.
because they were part of something that
How horrible, right?
yes.
To like maintain the
All
memory with a reset.
they
I
had
don't know
they
how you
tried to write
process
that with Wolverine and
it.
they like he got all of his memories back and then it just was like
It's too much.
oh now we're getting flooded with stories that are not good.
They did it with Silver Surfer too, right? When Silver Surfer was like, hey, in order to do a thing, Galactus, I need it all back. I need it all back. And Galactus is like, you know how many people you've killed, dude? If I give it all back to you. But Surfer's like, I gotta be me. I gotta be whole. Like, I don't know how heroes could deal with it.
Yeah.
Like, I also like that after the reset, Xavier is kind of like, looks at Strange and he's like, maybe you should take Ileana Rasputin here as an apprentice. And I'm surprised that didn't get touched on. Like that didn't happen. Like Strange is just like, I can't help her.
Well, it's weird that it did later on. So it's you kind of see how writers have done they have done that because Alana did come and work with Strange in the past, well in our past their future. Like they've done this so it's neat to see kind of like those seeds that were planted even in these early issues and how writers probably reading those books at the times have like plucked that out. It's almost how I feel about Celine in Marvel. It's like or with the X-Men it's like they plucked her when they needed her. Like when they needed that kind of villain, they just used her. And then they, because the Hellfire Club, I think back to them and the power sets alone for that team is amazing. And they only brought them in so they could, like Dark Phoenix showed up, tore them apart, and they never really, they kind of came around here and there. But it was weird that they just, I don't know. You could say the same thing about the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. I mean, they just always brought them in so that the heroes could take them down, I guess. I guess that's what I just answered my own question. They just bring them in so the heroes can take them down.
I will say, Sean, that in the beginning of 190, right, like that Valerie Cooper scene, I really liked that Valerie Cooper scene. I'm surprised I liked it. I thought it was beautifully drawn, for one. And I like that it kind of starts to set up the mutant hysteria and that part, and then the end part with Nimrod in the following issue. Both have a Dazzler mentioned, Sean, so I'm very pleased that Dazzler gets a nod.
Yeah, there was an editor's note for that. It's like, check that book out.
Oh man. Come
I
on,
believe. I
Jim.
believe.
Let's
Yeah.
go, Jim.
I believe it was like, hey, check that out. Check out the adventures of Dazzler. Oh,
Boy.
Dazzler.
Well, Sean, I think we've done it. I don't know about
Yeah.
you. Anything else you
Yeah.
wanted to hit on?
I just like kind of back to that art, just reading some of like I kind of noticed how Romita handles magma is so kind of different than her being drawn in New Mutants, where the lines are more lines and they're kind of rounded and curled and I
Swirly.
don't swirly over
Yeah, it
New
looks
Mutants.
like, yeah,
Yeah.
has a motion of lava to it.
it was odd seeing her in her that kind of form, and I don't know, but I still like the finishes by Green a lot, because you could really see it on some of the panels, and just some of those the fight scenes, backgrounds are just great in this book. Even the colors in these in my originals are still holding up, which I love. And the ads I miss so much. It's so good. I being pulled back, getting the paper again, and traveling down through the uncanny is always worth the trip. So
awesome, man.
Yeah.
We'll have to we'll find other opportunity to do it. I mean, shit, it almost seems like we could spend an entire 3 or 4 episodes talking about Asgardian Wars, but we don't need
that. Oh man. Ooh. Cause that's a,
or,
I mean,
or I've also threatened you with Archon. Cause he pops in and out of X-Men yep. annuals, mm-hmm. and then he goes on to Weird World, and I am full on Weird World guy.
His quiver comes into effect in Asgardian Wars.
Yeah.
Cyclops rocking that quiver with the lightning bolt stick. I was like, just who is this guy? And I want to follow him to the ends of the earth, because he looks so bad. He had his, like, that's when he had his glasses on. He hadn't put his hood up yet. I was like, that panel. Oh, God. Just the original of that. Draw me that.
You know what I like to think here, Sean? I'd like to think that because of the way I'm going back into our story here real quick, because of the way Rogue is crystallized and colored green, maybe she went and touched one of the Crystal Warriors, dude, and that's how she got to be.
See, but that story, like, that's the thing. It's like there were some missed opportunities. I even What Ifs, I don't think ever touched like this kind of story, which is weird, because it was to have the Avengers, the X-Men, the whole like twisting of like the genre, like making it, you know, swords and sorcery and barbarianish, and it was like, it just seems like that would be a story that they would touch back on a later time, like with a What If. So maybe you could have gotten what was going on. How did Vision get pulled in? You know, I get the Scarlet Witch, I understood that, but how did Vision, because he's a machine, but Warlock's a machine, he didn't get, so mm-hmm. there's all those kind of, like, you know, even like a What issue, like, hey, check this out, and Romita can even draw it. He's still around.
I need to be fired again, because his name is Warbo. He's the Crystal Warbo. Warrior from Crystallium.
You get you would have, I would have to nod all knowledge. I just know those covers.
I've got the and full run toys. Of Saga of Crystar, yeah. Dude. Holy crap. I love it. And then when they showed up in Jason Aaron's Weird World, I was like, what is happening? I'm exploding.
I love those moments in comics. Well, that happened in, like, that's what I dig about these old Uncannies, because then that thing about Claremont, yeah, I do kind of bash him for his exposition, but the sprinkles that he would put in, the nuggets that he would put in, is that when you read further down the line, like, oh my God, that's what that is. And you're like, you know, it's just those kind of, like when the brute, like a shark arrived in one of that uncanny outback, it was like Polaris and Havoc were on vacation and one of the sharks showed up. And Havoc's like, that's a bad sign. 2 issues later, the brood attack. And you're like, that's what that was about. You're like, crazy.
Yeah.
it's like, yeah. Thank you for doing that. Yeah.
Right on, man.
Good times. Good times. Thank you for the invite, man.
I'm glad we did it. We've kind of talked a little bit about doing something, so I'm glad we finally got to do it. I hope we do some more at some point. Kulan Goth, holy gosh, he's back on deck already. I've got planned for another talk about that guy. He's kind of the wizard I've been following, it seems, unknowingly going along with him. So I've got more Kulan Goth coming to talk about this year. But
So in Savage Avengers, Did they find that amulet?
I got to go back and I read all of Savage Avengers kind of in a
Because
huff
that would
about
be
it.
a
You know what I
great,
mean? I
yeah,
was.
that would be like their way. Because I know that they brought that universe back into the Marvel.
I'm doing his next Marvel pit stop is going to be the next thing. He appears in an Avengers comic when George Perez is drawing it, which I believe is it after Heroes Reborn?
Oh, really? I think
It's
that
after
is when
Heroes
Perez
Reborn.
came in, and yeah, didn't they go back like the very beginning of that book? It was all like
It's medieval
Middle
too. Like,
Ages.
yeah, it's fantasy too to start
Yeah.
off, but the storyline with Kulan Goth is a little bit down the road yet after that. So that's where I'm going next with
God, those
Kulan Goth.
Perez issues. Oh.
One of those covers, it's awesome. One of those covers is a tribute cover to Conan the Barbarian, and I love tribute covers.
I do
Like I
too.
love when I love it.
I do too. I was sold on the Batman Deadpool covers recently. So Sienkiewicz did the Wolverine. So it's the Wolverine Hulk cover
Oh,
with the
really?
Hulk reflection, but it's Deadpool and Batman.
Oh, that's
And
cool.
then Stegman did the other one, so it's Batman and then Deadpool. So
Wow.
I got those two variants. Because I was like, I love those old homage.
Homage, tribute,
Yes, I'm all
whatever.
for them. I'm all
Yeah.
for them.
Yeah,
Do it.
man.
Take my money.
What else am I gonna
Story
do?
the story inside, not maybe. That'd
I got one
be
more.
that
I got
great.
a little bit more space in this short box.
You
Let's fill it with a variant.
can always get another short box.
Oh boy.
Well,
Man,
yeah,
Sean,
we'll have to do it
thanks,
again
brother.
sometime. If possible, I'd love to have love to be back. Love the show.
Thanks. Thanks for listening. Thanks for playing
Yeah.
along. Thanks for being part of it. Before we get out of here, what am I going to say? I'm going to say support your local comic book shops.
For sure.
Sean works part-time at one.
I do. This month even.
support your local public libraries. You can read comics there. You can get movies from there that aren't on streaming. And also, hey, listen. If you find a really cool golden amulet, but it starts talking to you, don't, what we've learned here so far, don't throw it in the river like Spider-Man.
No.
Just throw it in the muck next to the train track. I'm sure a homeless guy is not going to find it, or Kulan Goth won't take over the mind of a rat, maybe. I don't know. I'm sure it'll be fine down there.
Oh, yeah, right.
Like, I can't wait to see how the amulet gets treated next. I hope
I'm
it remains part of
wondering.
this saga. I really do. And shame on me for not remembering Warbo. And if the amulet is even a thing in Savage Avengers, I mean, look, the Savage Avengers happens even after Kulan Goth appears in Dynamite Comics, after Kulan Goth appears in the Pathfinder comics. Like, this is crazy. Kulan Goth is crazy. That guy is a Sorcerer Supreme because he can be in all these different company crossovers.
Yes, right. They're like, we just need a sorcerer's villain. Cool. Can we borrow him? Sweet.
Yeah,
He's coming. He's
Kulan Goth.
coming.
He's bring him in. He'll have his same goofy hat and weird feather fringe neck piece, no matter where he's at.
Nice.
Sean, thank you, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's a great time, man.